Hello and welcome to another episode of Can I Have It in Blue, a podcast about design, technology, product, and everything in between. I am Joana Gomes, a product designer at Subvisual, and as usual, together with me today, I have João Ferreira, CPO at Subvisual.
Hello.
And Filipe Ribeiro, product designer at Filecoin Foundation.
Hello.
And today, we're going to talk about user research. And João, I'll start with you, since I know you're very passionate about this topic. Shall we start talking a little bit about our journey? Like, how was it for you when it comes to user research?
Sure. So there's not much in my background that would tie me to this topic. I started as a designer, a normal designer that wanted to do beautiful things. I did have a teacher that talked about the user experience side of things. This was in the academia, so it was not very typical for us to talk about that. It was mostly about, you know, the typography and color and composition, and not much talk about the actual users using the platform. I did have that bit of background, but was very little, to be honest. So when I started out at Subvisual, I was very noob. I was a very junior designer, learning as we go, reading a lot and all that. And my bump into user research was very hard to pinpoint the exact moment. I don't even remember the first project we actually did some kind of user research. I remember what it was. I don't remember which project. But the path was kind of, I would say, probably very cliche. It was like we were designing, we built products, right? So we were building software. We were really spending a lot of time and energy making sure everything looked great and all the details were taken care of, that the features made sense based on our assumptions only. And we had no idea that we could even validate those assumptions. And how was just that feeling of like, why does it, regardless of how good of a job we do, we still get this sensation, this feeling that things are not going as expected, that things don't work out, that we have issues, that people complain, that we have bad feedback or feedback that they don't know how to do this or that. Sometimes it was simple, was just going outside, you know, that bubble. So there's a bubble that you create when you start building a project where you have all your teammates and you have the stakeholders of the project and you sit in a room and you do some sessions and you work around things. And everyone there is very much aligned, so it works out. As soon as you leave the bubble, usually the problems start to arise. And that was the trigger that led me to pursue that path of like, why does it go like this? Why don't we have a better sense of how does this work before we even get to the market? How can we validate things before getting to the market and stuff like that? And it's really weird to think about that now because it seems so obvious now. I think for all of us, it's very obvious that we need to test things out and how we can validate. And we know we have the tools to do that. And we do it very easily now. But in that moment, I was the only designer at the company. We were all very inexperienced. So this was very much new. And even when we started learning about user research, there was always the topic of how can you actually do it? I remember Steve Krug was a very important influence for me, for us. I'm going to screw it up because I don't remember the name of the book, but it was something like, he has two books, one more theoretical, like why you should do it and why it's important and stuff. And then there he has one.
It's Don't Make Me Think.
I think that's the first one. And then the other one is like, not rocket science, right?
Yeah.
Or something like
that. Something like that,
yeah. It's not rocket science. So that book was really important because it was very practical. It's a very practical book, literally has a script written down for you. You can just use the script as it is. It's a big script. So very early on, we started to chop down the script, make it smaller, make it easier for those who have no experience in user interviews. In this case, this is a script that you read before you even start the interview to make the guest feel comfortable, explain to him what's going on. So it started with like a tutorial. It was like a tutorial book that we started using. And from that moment on, we got more experience. We got to educate the guests on what could work in terms of script, in terms of questioning, in terms of how to actually validate the things that we were seeing. To categorize and prioritize the problems, obviously, you will find a lot of issues in a first user test. And it's important to understand which ones are, you know, very problematic and which ones are not. We started to use that technique of like in between user interviews when you had like a major issue that was very clear that it was an issue and you could solve it, you would do it, and so that you wouldn't get the same answers that you already had before. So if I have a big issue, like something that's very obvious, we didn't notice it, but that after two or three interviews, we just see like the pattern showing up that this is an issue, we can fix it. So we don't influence the next two or three interviews that we have. Started by that pattern of like, okay, we have a book, we have a tutorial on how to do this, and then evolved slowly and started expanding into the actual product ideation phase, which is what we do now. So we do user interviews, we talk with users even before we have a product. We try to understand people who are already using tools, people who are trying to do the job to be done, we are trying to solve. How do they do it now? What do they use now? What have they tried? Why didn't they like option A and went for option B? What is it that you're trying to do? Why is it important? So all of that stuff came later and organically. It's really hard for me to even pinpoint, you know, the moments that happened. It was just something that organically started to grow, as you usually do when you're learning, right? So you start getting deeper and deeper. And that was my path to user research. At some point, I also spent 4 months at Ginetta, which is a Swiss company that's really focused on user research. They have real researchers, which was for me was crazy because I was just a designer trying to come up as a researcher. But that was also a fantastic experience for the learning side of things, but also for the validation, because we were not that bad, actually. We were actually doing things okay. Obviously, you can always improve details, but that was it. That was like the validation moment where it was like, okay, we are not doing it worse or a lot worse than these guys who are really, really good at this. So maybe we should keep going and we take these learnings and expand to the other team members. And we'll have time to talk about other sides of things, but I've been talking a lot, so I'll pass the ball. But that was my path to it.
My path was a little bit different because I started at Jutrust. And you were kind of my mentor when it comes to design and user research. So I guess like from day one, I understood that this was something important. I think you were at a stage that probably you were in a more advanced stage of your path by this point. So I guess from the beginning, I understood that this was something important. So even in my internship, we got to do some interviews and some usability tests and so on. So it was a little bit different. But I have a question, actually. I know you already talked a lot, but to someone that is in the beginning, do you have some advice? Because I believe that sometimes there's so much information out there that I felt this before. Like, it's hard for you to like to focus and really understand how you can choose the method. What exactly do you need to do at that stage of the product? So do you have any advice on how to start, I guess?
Yeah, I would say that it's very hard for you to, so even when you're starting out, so you want to try it out, right? So you read a book, you read Steve Krug's book or anything like that, or a blog post, whatever. There's a lot of stuff, as you said. I don't think there was that much when I started out, to be honest. Like, I kept seeing the same names and stuff like that. But I would say, so to start, it's always a good idea to start, even if you're not prepared. Just start it out, because it's really hard or near impossible for you to neglect work that you've done because you've run a few user interviews, right? So it's always going to be, you'll always learn something the first time you show a prototype, a Figma prototype to someone. That's also something I would like to point out. You don't have to user test with something that's online, that's live, there was development involved, it's already working, you can sign in, you can do it with a prototype, as we've done, as you know, plenty of times. So you can really start user testing on a MVP pre-phase where you're starting to think about, we want to launch a product, but I don't want to wait before we have actual development ready so that we can test. I can test it now while the team is still building the foundation, right? So you can test really early on. As you know, we have this method of getting user interviews. So let's say a project starts today. In 2 weeks' time at most, we can start user testing a prototype. Then we've done it plenty of times. Yes, it helps if you have experience and you're ready. And by the way, it helps a lot if you have experience in building a prototype fast and building a prototype with best practices, because you are already skipping some basic mistakes. Obviously, that helps. But I would start by saying that start today. If you have any interest in that, start today, because you can really quickly. So you don't need to have like the perfect person that fits the target audience. That's great, but it's usually hard to get. You can really learn just by showing your project to someone that has no idea what you're even doing. Probably you won't get, you know, some greater insights, but you'll have the basics. Like, does this make sense? Is this flow intuitive enough and people can understand it and follow through and get to the end? Can people understand the happy path and can they get to it? Can they understand the value? Even if they don't have the problem that you're trying to solve, they probably can understand the context and they can give you, you know, some clues about whether or not the value proposition is passing on to the user. So I would say start today. Don't worry about getting the right person to in the interview at first. Just get anyone. If it's someone from the project, obviously it's not great because they're biased. They know what you're talking about. They probably saw mockups. But even, as you know, even in subvisual, sometimes early on, we show things to people on the team, just not in the project team, but in our team that's working on something else. And we do that very early on because we know we're not going to get great insights. We're just going to, you know, take off the fat, take off the things that are just obvious, but we were so focused that we couldn't see it and stuff like that. So I would say that's the first one. The other one, read about it a lot, try it out as much as possible because, and this is something we, at least the three of us, talk about a lot, is that the most you can improve on this is little details. Is like how you speak, your posture, your tone, even the follow-up questions, how do you do it, how you pay attention to that. So it's going to be really hard to get from a point, like you get to a point very quick, like you start doing interviews, you start getting better, and you are evolving almost daily. And at some point you get to a plateau where it's like, from then on, it's just little details. It's just, you need to do it a lot. You need to be very mindful of your posture, body posture. Remember, this is usually video, at least if it's not live, it's usually video. It's better if you don't see the person or they don't see you, you're already, you know, corrupting a bit the results because there's no empathy. They won't feel that comfortable. So I would say just start today. You are probably more than ready to start. It won't do you any harm. It will most likely show you things you've never seen before, and you'll get a progress that you wouldn't even believe it was possible before you did it. It's like that light bulb moment when you understand that I can learn a lot more about, you know, the feedback and the impact of what I'm doing just by showing it to someone that hasn't seen it before, that has some kind of relation to the topic. That would be great. Other than that, I would say if you are on a more, you want to do it the professional way and you need the right person, not that hard. You can use tools like userinterviews.com and other platforms that you can really select the people you want to interview. You pay a reward, you pay some money to the people you are interviewing, and you can get a more accurate persona, a more accurate person to your target. As you know, we did that in Utrust because it was very specific. But for the usual stuff, you know, for not so complex stuff like Web3 stuff and all of that, your usual software as a service platform, you can get anyone, I would say that.
And I'd just like to add that probably the first ones will be bad or be bad. That's all right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the only way we can get better. It's just by doing, by practicing it. And along the way, we're just, you know, we'll learn and it will get better and easier with time.
Yeah. It does touch a point, though, just for those who might be listening and trying to engage the courage to do it. It touches a point that's very sensitive to designers, which is we are usually a bit defensive in terms of feedback. That's going to be challenging. I think it's actually one of the other consequences, positive consequences of doing this, you know, letting your guard down a bit. Just don't worry. It's not about you. You're doing good. You're doing well. This is some things you can correct. This is some things you can improve. Let your guard down. Like, if you don't have bad feedback on a user interview, you did it wrong.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
That's my motto.
That's actually the big difference between graphic design and like product, I would say. Obviously, one of the differences. Because, you know, product is such a iterative process. One, it's never finished. There is no such thing as a finished product. And also, like, you really need to get feedback. And it's really a teamwork to do it. It can happen a bit in graphic design, but I feel it's different. And I feel like if you really want to build better products, you really need to be open to feedback. At the beginning, as you said, Ryan, I totally agree. It might be a bit weird and it might be a bit complicated for you to really be willing to take that feedback. But I think that's inevitable in product design. And you cannot be a product designer if you're not willing to hear what other people have to say about your product and to really watch them using it at the beginning. So it's just easier to accept that, you know, the first iteration will be not great, but then that's, you know, the beauty of product development is that you have the chance to really iterate on that. And I think it also helps you a bit because the pressure is not that high for the first version because you can say, oh, it's just, you know, just something so we can test and we get feedback on that and we can iterate on it and it will be better. So I think in a sense, it's even better because you don't feel the pressure of making everything perfect on the first version.
Exactly. I would say like the earlier, the better.
Exactly.
Because usually, even if you are in the wireframing stage or whatever, it's useful because at that point, you can already catch some problems with the product, even if it's just usability or whatever. If you test earlier, you catch those issues and you will find other issues in the future, of course, but you can already correct it and test again and iterate, basically.
Exactly. And also by sharing it with other team members, including the thing, you know, I'm going a bit outside of the user research realm, but like by just be willing to share it with engineers in our team, be willing to take their feedback as well, to understand the technical constraints of our decisions, and, you know, just to really be open to their feedback as well. Because, you know, most of the time they also have a lot of knowledge in UX and they are able to see things that we are missing because, you know, we cannot think of everything at the same time. So I really like that, you know, product is really a teamwork and you really need a lot of, you know, expertise to make something great.
Yeah, but like our brains are different, right? So something that feels okay for me may not be okay for other people. So you need to test it out and see other visions, other interactions with your product, because what may be simple to you, maybe it's not for others.
Exactly. Yeah,
absolutely.
I remember, so when I was doing the summer camp at SubVisual, it was really funny because it was, you know, my first experience with user research. And it was the best experience possible because it's a bit different than like the normal environment where, you know, a client comes to you with a problem and a solution already in mind. But at SubVisual, we didn't have like a solution in mind. We just had the problem and we needed to think about the solution. So we had a sort of like some freedom in that sense to explore possible solutions for it. So we were presented with a problem and then we schedule a couple of initial user interviews just to understand the problem. And basically I prepared the sort of like script with some general questions about it. And I, so the first ones, I think it was like on my second or third interview that I realized that the person I was interviewing didn't actually perceive the problem in what I was trying to solve. So I was trying to find a solution for a problem that specific person didn't perceive, which was really funny because, well, at that time, it was not funny. It was really stressful because, you know, I had just realized that my entire script was just useless because I couldn't use it in the middle of the interview. Not so great. But it was a great learning experience because obviously I jumped to the interviews, you know, already thinking that everyone sees this problem as it is because that's what we've been told and we need to find a solution for that. But sometimes in, you know, the real world, you'll find people whose opinions are completely different. And sometimes the problem that you're trying to solve is not that valuable for, you know, other people. Even more important, sometimes it's not that valuable for people that you're thinking that are your target audience, which is even funnier. But it was good because it taught me that I couldn't take that for granted and that I needed to start from zero, you know? So it was a very fun experience, I would say.
And I feel at this moment it's very intertwined. Like I was just thinking about how in our process we introduce user research, and it feels like it's like embedded in it at the moment. I always struggle to break it down because it feels like it's embedded in everything. Like we do design sprints, we do design thinking workshops in various shapes and forms, And we are always on the lookout for assumptions that we need to validate. We are always on the lookout for what we need to test, what we need to check. And we try to get more and more abstract, if that makes sense. As in, instead of thinking about features, let's think about why does this feature belong in this, like, what is it solving? Why is it here? What's it actually doing? And a lot of times, as you know, either it's not well thought out or not thought out at all, or maybe it's there because some competition has it or some other platform that we are looking as an example has it. And it's like, if you do the same thing that your competition is doing, that other platforms are doing, you're not going to stand out. So even understanding who you're competing with is also something you can get from user research. Sometimes you don't really understand, and that's, we can leave it for another episode, but the jobs to be done theory and things like that, where you understand that what you're solving is not, you're not solving for a set of features, you're solving for a problem, for a job that someone wants to do. So knowing why, in what context, with what goal people will be using your platform sometimes can lead to very surprising results. Sometimes you can understand that in reality, the features that, you know, the stakeholders thought out are just there because they saw, you know, this big player doing it and we need to do the same. And after you talk to people, maybe they'll even tell you, like we had in the past, people tell you like, oh, I use that, but I hate it because it's just too complicated and you don't use 90% of the features. And so it's like, why would we even try to build those 90% of features if, you know, if we keep talking and hearing people say that these are not so important for them. Maybe these are for, I don't know, I don't want to get too specific, but like, these are just features that only interest big companies. And I'm a small company, or I'm a medium company, or I'm just an individual. So I don't need all that. So it allows you to go back to the drawing board with insights and make informed decisions. I think that's very much the key aspect. I just want to go back really quick. I remember at one point in the beginning that I was using the user interviews as a shield, as a way for me to have a backup to my design decisions. Like, I made these decisions, I'm going to prove that I'm right. If you're listening to me, don't do this, please. This is wrong. It doesn't give you good results. It's a mistake. You should always go to a user interview willing, more than willing, hoping to be wrong. Like, you want to be wrong really quick. You want to get the problems out really quick. You don't want to use the results of user interviews or user testing or whatever to validate your assumptions. You want to just challenge everything. I remember, I think, Joana, you even heard me say this a few times at least, which is like, I sometimes go to a user test to test a prototype that I designed or I was very much involved with. And the first thing I say to the person that's on the other side is like, so don't worry about it. Like, I had nothing to do with what you're seeing. I was just hired to do the user tests. You can speak your mind freely. My feelings won't get hurt at all because, to be honest, I know very little about this project. So we are just here to see, you know, how it works in the wild, to see the project used by someone who has never seen it. And I only learned about this project like 2 days ago, right? So this idea, this passionate, like, we have no passion for what we're showing. We just want to hear the hard truth. That's also something that came with time. In the beginning, I was very defensive and using it as a defense mechanism to show that I was right. That's also very much a problem more than anything else, and you won't get anything good out of that.
I actually didn't know you did that, but okay. That's a good idea, actually.
I did that on UTrust. I remember, that's what I was saying, because I remember at UTrust, because we talked with potential users of UTrust, if you remember. And I was like, I'm not in the team. I'm just here to test. And I don't care about what you say. I just want to, you know, I care about what you say, but I'm not going to be hurt because I didn't design anything. I'm not a designer. I'm just here to interview people. So that was one way for me to expose as much as I could the vulnerabilities of the design, was like saying, I'm in the same level as you. That's also a good way for you to avoid answering questions, because in a user test, you don't want to, you know, be answering that many questions while they're using the product, because you want to have an experience where it's like you're not even there, right? You're like you're watching over the shoulder of the people, of the user. So you want to act like you are, you know, not even there. And people will ask questions, right? So when someone can't do something, they'll even think out loud or make a question directly to you. And you want to say, you know, I'd rather you tried it out on your own and then we'll figure it out later. It's okay that you, if you can't make it through past this phase. It's okay. That's a learning point for us and it's all good. Don't worry about it. So you want to be this passion. Like you have no passion at all for what you're testing. You just have infinite curiosity. That's also one motto for this. Just be very much child in terms of curiosity. Like be very curious about everything they say they do and they tell you. Be very curious.
I really like that. I think that's cute.
Yeah, me too. And that also avoids people trying to please you, right? Because...
Yes, yeah, that's very common.
That happened in the past, like when I was doing usability testing, sometimes people like, I understand, like I see that they are struggling and they are kind of apologizing for it. And that's not the goal. Like I say, I always begin the interview saying that I'm not testing them, I'm testing the UI. So yeah. I always do that disclaimer. But it doesn't work because they know that I did it. So they like get in this apologizing mode.
Yeah.
So that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
I will try it for sure.
There's an intrinsic human need to please
exactly.
That you really can't avoid. Even if you say that you didn't design it, people will still have the bias to not, you know, complain that much. I noticed that when I used userinterviews.com, you get people that do this regularly, sometimes, not always, but you sometimes will get people that have done, I don't know, 20, 30 tests, right? So those are obviously the best for me. I might be wrong here. I just feel like when I get someone that has done this a few times, they understand that what we want is absolute honesty, brutal honesty. We want to hear everything. But that's a mindset that's worked on. You don't come in to a user test or user interview for the matter with that mindset, right? Someone's gonna, you know, show you stuff and maybe they'll, you know, give you a gift afterwards. So you want to please, you want to make sure they are not offended or insulted and stuff like that. So even if you say you didn't design, there will still be the bias, the intrinsic human behavior of not wanting conflict, not wanting to offend, not wanting to be harmful to the other person. But it helps to say you have nothing to do with it. It does help because it allows you to have the narrative of like, I don't know. To be honest, I can't really answer you because I don't know as well what's going on. But what do you think of it, right? What do you think is going on? Or what do you think has happened and stuff like that?
And we are getting to the end of our time today. But I feel like this topic is so vast and there are so many topics that we can discuss here that we probably will need to do a part two of user research. Do you agree?
That sounds great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So thank you, everyone, and see you in the next episode.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.